Blog Talk Radio.
Much less detail the podcast on a Tuesday night, October 14th, 2014. I'm Dre. My partner Jay will be here momentarily. Very wild week six in the NFL to recap tonight. All sorts of ups and downs as far as my pick and Jason's picks. He had some crazy come from behind wins to win his picks. I had some crazy come from behind wins. I had more wins early on the day on Sunday. He had more wins late, and he had two primetime wins last week that I was not able to get. He won all three night games as opposed to me only winning one on Sunday night. And as a result, we wound up even. After all of that, we both went 8-7 on a crazy week six. So he maintains his five-game advantage on me. He's at 47-40-4. On the year, 47 wins, 40 losses, and 4 ties. For a 540 percentage, I'm at 42 wins, 45 losses, and 4 ties for a 483 percentage, which, quite frankly, I'm not all that disappointed with, because if I go back merely 2 weeks ago, after week 4, I was at 414 on the season. And even 2 weeks before that, week after week 2, I was at 290, because I was 9-22-1. So all things considered, I've bounced back pretty well in the last 4 weeks to forge a decent record for myself, only three games under 500. So Jason, not signed in yet. The Blog Talk experience with our Skype headsets and our primetime episodes and all the upgrades and whatnot, it's more difficult to sign in sometimes as a guest, because you have to wait till the show goes live, then you have to punch in right as the show goes live if you want to be ready for right at the beginning of the show, which Jason's done a better and better job of doing lately, but this time not able to make it. And there he is, actually, after 3 minutes or so. So we had a little trouble getting in tonight.
Yeah, that wasn't a fun few minutes there. The page was not cooperating, allowing me to call in. So I got to watch the ad that precedes our show about 8 times.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the Skype option wasn't coming up. I had this one other time happen to me and seemed like a one-time thing. And otherwise, you know, that Skype symbol comes up right away as soon as the show starts. Not today. I did manage to catch a little bit of the of what you were saying, though.
About my filibustering.
Yeah, but you're crawling out of the grave that you dug yourself at the beginning of the year.
Yeah. I'm quite proud of being three games under 500, frankly, because it could have been a lot worse after that beginning of the year that I had.
It doesn't usually go that bad, though. I mean, well, we have stretches. You just happen to have your stretch right at the beginning.
Had a very early stretch of really bad, yeah. As far as logging into Skype and all the troubles that you were having, Aaron Rodgers has some advice about that. Just got to relax.
I just need to take a deep breath, right? Just settle down. Calm down.
The Aaron Rodgers' advice to everybody is to always just relax. That takes care of everything. You got the Bears and the Dolphins on the schedule. Just relax. It's all going to be all right. That's
right. I'll tell you what, the Dolphins gave them almost more than they could handle.
Yeah. It was a tight game. It was I wish I could have seen it, but yeah, it was a very close game there. I got lucky sort of pulling that one out. The old Dan Marino spike, the old fake spike comes to roost and goes against the Miami Dolphins this time.
Yeah, a little karma, you know? Is that a little...
You want to screw over the Jets like that? Well, the Packers come in and say, okay, here's a little screw you right back. It's only, you know, 24 years later or something like that.
Well, it always comes around.
That's right.
Green Bay, you know, I watched that game. That's the local game here. I was able to see that game. Of course, it's the local game here. I mean, that's the home team. And the Packers looked really good early. Couldn't run the ball, but they were, you know, the defense was playing really good. The offense wasn't moving so well, but they held on to a lead. But the problem was, and I kept saying this to the people I was watching the game with, is, and the Packers have a tendency to do this, but they were letting a team that they were clearly better than just hang around. And eventually, you know, anytime that happens, especially when you're on the road, you let a team that doesn't deserve to be in the game kind of hang around, and things then generally seem to go bad. And then the Packers lost both of their starting corners, and all of a sudden things started to open up a little bit for Miami's offense. Miami kind of got rolling there in the second half, even taking that late lead. Really, some really awful clock management there at the end of the game for the Dolphins, and they gave Aaron Rodgers way too much time, and it bit him in the ass. And got you a nice half-point win.
I'll take it.
This was a week of incredibly improbable wins for both of us. And what's amazing is that we disagreed on 10 games, and through all the crazy endings to games, all the lines, the hooks that were all out there, we still managed to go 5-5. 2 weeks in a row now, we've split a huge number of games. We both managed to go 10-4 last week. We both managed to go 8-7 this week. You know, so I guess the positive for me is you've managed to put up two really nice weeks and haven't picked up a single game on me.
Haven't made a damn bit of progress. Ain't that some shit?
Your two best weeks of the whole year.
And you're right there with me.
And you get nothing out of it. So I guess I will take that as a positive for me, that I still get to hang on to a five-game lead.
Yeah, all I can do is keep working and keep grinding away. That's all I can do. I'm like a player now. Just got to keep working. Just keep working at it. Keep grinding away. Keep hammering at that hammer, at that rock.
Well, where
it'll break through.
I was really feeling bad about my week early, and those noon games I just did awful. And things turned around for me with some luck at the end of those afternoon games. Specifically, I didn't know how I'd lost that Denver pick to you until later on in the day. So that didn't even fuel my despair, because it just looked like, oh, they won by 14. Okay, I did not know that they won on a pick six with 18 seconds left to go in the game. Then I see Arizona just, you know, they're holding the lead, they're holding the lead. They keep getting to about the 38-yard line of their opponent. It was the Redskins. They keep getting to about the 38-yard line and punting. And they just refused to go up by more than three. So I'm just damn sure I'm going to get hooked here, because that was a 3.5-point home spread. And I'm just like, oh, man, I'm going to lose this one. And then you're going to beat me with the Rams on Monday night, and you're going to go 7-3 against me, and you're going to pick up, you're going to be one game behind me after all of this. And then then I just knew that you would be just unbearable tonight. If that had happened, I'm like, oh man, I can't look forward at all to that Tuesday show if he picks up four games on me, and then all of a sudden we're looking at a one game difference after 6 weeks. But I'll tell you what, the same thing that you did to me with Denver happened with Arizona. Kirk Cousins just decided to throw a pick six with under 20 seconds left to go in the game. kind of put a little pep back in my step. And then even after that rough first quarter last night, where it looked like your boy Austin Davis was going to just destroy the 49ers. The 49ers couldn't do anything in that first quarter. The Rams decided just to go back to what we expect them to do. And all their little house of cards fell apart when they just decided to not cover Brandon Lloyd at halftime, basically.
Man.
And that was basically when that game ended. I mean, I know it only made it 14-10, but it had no business being a 14-10 game. So San Francisco goes in on this huge high. I mean, who throws an 80-yard touchdown pass to a wide-open receiver with 10 seconds left to go in the half? That's like a Madden move.
Who allows a receiver to get open on a double move with no time on the clock and no timeouts for the other team? What are you doing?
But who's single cover? That is beyond just bad coverage. That's a whole bad scheme.
That's something went wrong there. I can't believe Greg Williams would draw that up, but something went horribly wrong on that play.
Yeah, you only can get burned basically one area, and that's deep up the sideline, and that was where their coverage was the weakest. And it ended up, you know, floodgates opened up in the second half for the 49ers. Thankfully, I managed to watch that game last night, and all of that just to stay even with you, you know, for the week, and to hang on to my lead. So I will definitely take it after picking the Bucks. I had some horrible picks this week. We both did, I guess, in hindsight.
yeah.
You know, I definitely felt like I had the worst of the bad picks, though, with Tampa Bay. Oh, Tampa Oof. Bay. I mean, that game was over at the end of the first quarter.
No kidding.
You know, we talk about the level of comebacks. Nobody was coming back in that game.
Flacco had, what, 5 touchdown passes in the second quarter?
Yeah, that was a minute into the second quarter. I remember looking at the scores. You know, I'm looking on my phone. I'm trying to keep up with everything. And a minute, maybe 2 minutes had gone by in the second quarter when he threw that fifth touchdown.
I haven't seen a second of highlight of that game, nor it really any other game this week, but where is Lovie Smith's great defensive mind? What happened? This is why you bring Lovie Smith in to coach your team, is because he's going to stabilize the team. He's going to wash away all the dirt and the sins and the grime and the MRSA that Greg Schiano brought in last year. And this is your output. This is your defensive output under Lovie Smith. This doesn't look anything like the Chicago Bears from the last, you know, decade or so, which I'm sure is what they expected a facsimile thereof, and this doesn't look anything like it. This is just getting burned all over the field by multiple teams, because they had a Thursday night game, Tampa did, where the Atlanta Falcons embarrassed them probably even more. It's hard to get embarrassed worse than on a game in which you gave up 5 touchdown passes in a quarter and 1 minute. But I would say the Atlanta game was even more embarrassing, because that was 56-0 at one point.
Yeah, the reason I would say, because that's definitely, I mean, 48-17 or 48-whatever. I mean, they got crushed in that game too, and all those touchdowns that they scored against Atlanta and Baltimore were meaningless garbage time,
complete garbage
touchdowns.
Time, yeah.
So let's just factor in the fact that they're down 35-0 and 56-0 in 2 out of their last 3 games.
When they get destroyed, they get destroyed.
How bad is Pittsburgh then? Just throwing that out there.
Your favorite?
Yeah,
team.
I have to, because you know my favorite team. I don't know why. I'm so down on the Steelers this year. But the Browns represented well. They really stepped up. And you know, before I go back to Tampa, and you think about Cleveland, that's a team that's been competitive in every single game. And, you know, could easily have a little bit better record than they do now. But I think they're right where they should be. But, yeah, nice win, especially considering, you know, all the history going against them that you pointed out our last show with when we made the picks, all the stuff that goes against them when they play Roethlisberger. He just owns them. He owns them almost to the level that Brady owns the Bills. And they didn't have it. They definitely did not have it at Cleveland.
Big Ben is now 18-2 as a starter against the Cleveland Browns.
Well, you know, it's that's still not perfect, right?
No, it was one loss before, and he doubled it. He doubled it in a big way.
That's right, you know. And no, Tampa losing. Don't want to talk about Tampa all night, but Tampa losing to Atlanta, I think it was worse because Joe Flacco was hot and he threw a lot of touchdowns. Atlanta was scoring in every phase of the game against Tampa. Atlanta was throwing touchdowns, running touchdowns, kick returning touchdowns, and defensively scoring touchdowns. That's just utter domination on every side of the game, where against Baltimore it was just Joe Flacco going insane. Completely. And after the game, Lovie Smith commented, a little subtle, but if you listened, he basically said that his team has no talent. His team is shit. So it's already week six. He's throwing the team under the bus. They're not, you know, you'd think he wouldn't be on the hot seat, but they're not just losing games. They're getting annihilated in games.
Doesn't he have some personnel say that I thought he got a little more stroke with his job than just being the head coach? So he might be able to partially blame himself for that talent. I know he's trying to throw the GM under the bus by saying that, but I think he's got a little more hand in talent evaluation than he did with the Bears.
I've got this weird feeling that he lost the team when he named McClown the starter. And it not even was a competition. As soon as they signed McClown, they named him the starter. And I get the sense, especially after the way they played for Glennon in that game against Pittsburgh, that maybe he kind of lost some of his team at that moment.
Josh is our quarterback.
Yeah.
He
could go back to him at this point because what the hell does it matter?
Oh, no. Mike Glenn is the future. He's the greatest thing to slice bread. Come on now. I get the complete sarcasm, obviously, folks. I get the feeling Lovie may have lost his team when he decided he or the personnel people there, the GM, whoever made this decision, decided that Revis Island, who as much as I think he's overrated, is probably going to be a Hall of Fame cornerback, did not fit his Lovie 2, his Tampa 2, his precious Tampa 2 scheme, and shipped him out of town before they played a game. I think he may have lost the team with that decision, even more so than the McClown thing.
Yeah, that'll downgrade your team's talent a little bit.
Just a bit. If you pretend like it's a Madden roster, that's a huge number that you're taking off your team as far as an overall rating, and you don't have too many huge numbers left on your overall rating that high.
Well, I mean,
especially in the secondary.
Yeah, you'd almost think you've got a lockdown corner. So what if you play a lot of zone defense? You find a use for that guy.
You would think,
but hey, Lovie knows best.
Apparently not.
He got a team to the Super Bowl.
He did. He
got a lot of guys can't say that.
Grossman is a quarterback to the Super Bowl.
A lot of teams can't say that for sure.
As far as Cleveland, I don't know if they're for real or not. I'm still skeptical. I guess what I would say is time's going to tell if the coaching is that good. If Mike Pettine is just a savant and the next big thing as far as head coaches go. But of what I've been hearing on multiple podcasts and recaps of week six is how Cleveland's record could look really, really juicy because their next three opponents, have you heard who their next three opponents are?
I have not. This is interesting. Who are
Cleveland's next three opponents are the Jacksonville Jaguars, the Oakland Raiders, and Lovie's Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Cleveland could be easily 6-2 by the time they hit their next tough opponent, which I don't have queued up. I should have had that queued up before I started the conversation. But the point is, they've got three cupcakes coming up, three in a row. And if they play with the same effort that they've been playing the first six games of the season, then they really should win those three games, you know, almost with ease. Because it only takes a little effort to beat the Jags, the Raiders, and the Buccaneers.
and you would normally say, just before the season even started, that if Cleveland got to six, that would be a successful season.
Sort of a
for
successful
Cleveland.
Year, yeah.
They could be at six in week nine.
Yeah.
Let's break this down here, because you did correctly ascertain that they are playing Jacksonville, Oakland, and Tampa Bay. It gets harder after that.
Well, a lot harder. Their week 10 is a Thursday night affair at Cincinnati, which is not going to be easy.
And they host Houston. They go to Atlanta. You know, maybe that's a 50-50 chance. You never know with Atlanta. They go to Buffalo. They could win that game. They host the Colts. Then they get the Bengals, the Panthers, and the Ravens. So, you know, 6-2, and you still might only finish 8-8.
I was about to say, could turn into 8-8, 9-7 really easy, yeah. That does not guarantee a playoff spot.
Yeah. Now, let's not forget, though, the two games they lost very close. They were up on Baltimore. Baltimore, I believe, came back and won that game. They beat the Saints. So they're not – in the games they're losing, they're not getting killed. They got killed in that first half against Pittsburgh and then came all the way back, could have won that game. Could have beaten the Ravens.
They also got killed in the first half against the Tennessee fucking Titans, which I still don't understand.
They did. They have the largest road comeback in NFL history. So interesting team. I mean, I did pencil in Cleveland into one of those two wild card spots. And boy, that's looking smarter than the Jets. So
well,
I'll take it. Although, you know what? Even though I lost that pick, with the craziness at the end of that Denver-New York, they did play the Broncos tough. Rex Ryan confused the hell out of Peyton Manning, and he was frustrated the whole day. It still wasn't enough for them. But I lost the pick, but I still feel like I saw it right. I don't know if that's possible to lose the pick but still feel good about it, but I do.
Okay, well, that's something I usually pull out when I lose a close pick. Well, you know, I think I got that right, even though I got it wrong. So
I didn't get it right because they didn't win. But yeah. I at least saw it kind of going down the way it went down. It just, you know, Geno gave him seven right at the end. What do you do?
Speaking of Geno, so the big question, of course, Geno Smith, Michael Vick, or does it not matter?
Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because I get the sense neither one of those guys are going to be there next year if this keeps going.
And I get the sense neither one of those guys want to be there right now, the way they're playing.
I mean, this day and age where obviously you draft a quarterback, you give him 2 years, and if he doesn't pan out, you go and draft another one. Seems to be the way it's getting. Like, look at Buffalo.
Yeah, just throw away BJ Manuel for the veteran, and maybe they'll draft a new guy next year. Who knows?
Just ditch these guys, you know, Christian Ponder, EJ Manuel, Geno. Just hey, you know what? Let's just overreach on these first round quarterbacks. If the guy doesn't pan out instantaneously and we're terrible again the next year, let's just do it again.
Blaine Gabbert, yeah.
Oh yeah, I mean, it doesn't help that you get drafted by a shitty team. Just putting a quarterback on a shitty team doesn't make the team better, does it? No.
No, you'd certainly have to surround them with actual talent.
You still got to block for him. You still got to run the ball. You still got to have talent. You didn't get the number one pick or a high pick because your team was good. So you anticipate you're just going to go out, this one guy, this quarterback, that was our missing piece. Because I'll tell you what, there's a lot of teams out there that could probably go 8-8. Mediocre quarterbacks. There's teams that win the Super Bowl with mediocre quarterbacks, but everything else is good. Those teams don't get the number one pick.
That's right.
They're doing it all wrong, I'll tell you that.
I want to get the plugs out of the way now for a couple reasons, because if you listen to the live show only and you don't want to listen to the after show because you think it's just more boring, dry football talk. Well, let me tell you, the last after show we did went a full hour of us going back and forth. I thought it was pretty funny and entertaining. We got into a whole lot of different topics, not just football, but baseball, some restaurant talk, some Taco Bell diarrhea talk, and you know, we bounced around. We hit a lot of different areas. I can't say we're going to do that tonight because Jason's got a health situation with his wife that he's got to tend to after the show. So our after show tonight probably won't last very long at all. But there is something I want to talk about in the after show, which is the worst fantasy bad beat of all time, which I suffered thanks to that horrible game last night, in addition to losing the fucking pick. So if you listen to the after show, if you listen to the live show, which is, of course, right here on blogtalkradio.com/inmuchlessdetail, and you don't listen to the after show for some reason, go ahead and switch over to the after show after we're done. After the show is completely over is when the after show goes up on iTunes. If you search for In Much Less Detail, the podcast, and subscribe to iTunes, you will get the show right in your feed automatically. Also on our archive page here on blogtalkradio.com/inmuchlessdetail, when you get the archive of a show, you're getting the full show, which is the live plus the after show, not just the live portion of that show. All our picks are always up on the blog, inmuchlessdetail.blogspot.com. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at IMLDDre. Jason's at IMLDJTG. We're still waiting for our first email. You would send that to inmuchlessdetail@gmail.com. That interception last night to seal the game, giving you a pick, bookending the week where you had an interception to seal the deal in the Thursday night game to seal the pick for you there. It was just great. And then, you know, some picks in between the seal games, one for you with Arizona, one for me with Denver. What a crazy week it was. Just silliness all the way around. And then in the middle of all that, the highest scoring tie in NFL history. In the middle of all that, one of the greatest upset picks in recent memory of you saying the Cowboys are going to go into the biggest home field advantage in the league and steal a victory, and that's exactly what they did. Just a lot of silliness. The Falcons lost a home game. The Lions lose Megatron and still get a win. There's a lot of things to dig into here.
Yeah. And I'm glad you got all the plugs out of the way, because I don't know if you saw, I was poking around, you know, trying to figure out if we were doing a show tonight, and we can't do it tomorrow night. You know, I had an issue with my wife's having a medical issue, so I had to take care of some things tonight. And your anniversary is tomorrow, so happy anniversary.
Well, thank you very much. I was not available tomorrow night. Much time as I take away from my wife for the show and for football in general, tomorrow night definitely belongs to her.
Yes. So as I'm poking around on our show page trying to figure out, wait, now it says we're doing the show tomorrow night, and then I'm looking at it. We had, I don't know if you noticed this, a ridiculously high number of listens to our last show.
No, I didn't even look at that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I hope it wasn't a glitch.
Probably was.
But on the 11th, what day was the 11th? Was that Saturday?
Saturday.
I want to thank anybody who listened to that show. It said we had 74 archive listens to our show on Saturday. Yeah, you look at this. You look at our graph, and all of a sudden, boop. So I don't know what happened. I know you were doing some shouting out to the Pro Football Focus crowd, so.
You think those nerds tuned in? I did have a couple new followers on Twitter after that, so yeah, somebody was listening.
So maybe somebody listened to our show. Thanks.
Yeah, and thanks to Pro Football Focus. Those stats actually seem to give some insight into the games, as far as I'm concerned.
The one damn game I used a trend or a stat for, you go along with me. And, by the way, it was a winner.
Yeah, I tried to torpedo you, but...
You did try, but no, Jacksonville didn't win the game, but they're solid cover in these situations at Tennessee, so...
They had a field goal to win the game. It happened to get blocked.
They did. No, where I want to, you'd think I was, you'd think segueing into the Seattle Dallas game would be where I would go, but I'm actually going to go to the tie because I have I'm going to take exception to the crowd. Most notably, I was watching during the pregame show on NBC on Sunday night, the most horribly named pregame show, Football Night in America.
Yeah, is it that? That's almost as douchey sounding as In Much Less Detail, the podcast.
Almost. Watching that, and they go through the highlights, and I was waiting for it once the tie happened, and in this case, the person who said what I was waiting for so I could hammer on him was Rodney Harrison, who just like, oh, these guys work too hard. Blah, blah, we just need to do away with the tie. Blah, blah. You know what? No. There's nothing wrong with having a tie. Absolutely nothing wrong. You didn't lose, but you didn't win. Okay, you know what? You still play to a tie. Trust me, when it gets to tiebreaker season, at the end, that tie is very useful. There's a lot of teams who get into the playoffs because they had a tie, because you didn't lose the game, so don't bitch and moan about the tie. I'm going to blame this on the PC crowd that created the situation for more ties with the everybody needs to get a chance in overtime. Because the clock's still going, right?
Yeah.
It's 15 minutes. You get the possession. Okay. You go down. You don't do something. The other team gets to go. They don't do something. Either you just do away with the stupid clock and just have each team get a possession. And then if that's it, the game is over. No, that's it. Each team gets one possession. Whatever the score is after that, just that's it.
Oh, I thought you were going to say do away with the clock and just have them go until someone scores or someone falls out and dies, one of the two.
But, oh, you do like the college overtime? No, I don't want the college overtime.
No, because the college overtime is the worst, because that's where the whole genesis of everybody must have a turn started.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I thought you meant just have the sudden death overtime go until somebody scores, and if it goes past 15 minutes, and so be it. Kind of like the playoffs.
I had nothing wrong with the sudden death overtime. I mean, I'm okay with them doing the everybody's got to get the ball. Save that crap for the postseason because somebody's got to win the game.
Right.
But the sudden death was fine. I had no problem with it. I didn't think it was patently unfair that it was like 74%, 75% teams that won the toss would go down and get the field. Stop somebody.
So, right.
That's it. So Cleveland, or Cincinnati, I should say, Cincinnati would have just won that game if these were the old rules. Now, they should have won the game anyways. They're liquored up idiot kicker. Just a field goal there.
Wait a minute. Mike Vanderjagt came out of retirement?
No, I love saying that. That's such a great quote. But, yeah, and of course, I knew it was going to happen. I knew people were going to start pushing for the, we got to get rid of the ties now. If you're going to have a 15-minute overtime, and fairness with the ball. I mean, it was basically Cincinnati goes on a long drive, kicks a field goal. Carolina goes on a long drive and kicks a field goal. There's barely enough time for Cincinnati to now go down the field, and then they tried to kick a field goal, 37-yard field goal with no time left. They missed it. You know what? Yeah. You guys deserve to tie. That's it. Go home.
Well,
it's a dangerous sport, so you don't want to put these guys at risk even longer.
Ah, why not?
Yeah, why not? We don't care about players' safety, do we?
The NFL doesn't. They lie like they do, but they don't.
So I was just waiting for somebody to say, we can't have ties. I'm completely fine with ties. It doesn't bother me one bit.
This is why you can't go back and forth with what the people say, like a windsock, like certain people do. Because back a couple of weeks ago when Denver found themselves in overtime against Seattle and Seattle wins the coin toss, drives down and scores a touchdown to end the game.
Oh yeah. Denver was not getting the ball back.
The cries started once again for some sort of amendment to the system to make sure that talented warriors like Peyton Manning aren't robbed of their fair and just due and their ability to win the game themselves. They should have a chance too. Peyton Manning never had a chance. He never touched the ball in overtime. This is why the damn rule was brought in, where they both had to touch the ball in overtime if one team doesn't score on their first possession or only kicks a field goal. It's because
right.
Peyton Manning lost an overtime game back when he was with the Colts on a field goal that lost him a big game where he never touched the ball. But the difference is this time, now they've amended the rule. Now if it was a field, it's basically the Peyton Manning rule. If Seattle had to kick the field goal against Denver in overtime, Peyton would have gotten the ball back and would have had a chance to touch it and had a chance to win anyway. It's not his fault that the defense let Seattle go down and score a touchdown to end the game. Eventually, you have to stop somebody. Like you said, stop the damn football. It's not Peyton Manning does not deserve to have the football in overtime if his team happens to lose a coin toss and gives up points on defense. If you get the ball in overtime, if Peyton Manning had won the coin toss and got the ball in overtime and won the game himself, then nobody would be complaining about the rule because Peyton Manning got to touch the football, and who cares if Russell Wilson didn't get to touch it because he's Russell Wilson. But because the big star Peyton Manning didn't get to touch the football, then the cry went out again to re-amend the rule that they had to amend before because he didn't get to touch the ball. Just shut up with that. I'm with you. I cannot stand that rule that you have to have the other team touch the ball if the first team happens to not score or scores only a field goal. It's so contrived. You know, Bud Selig is the king of stupid, contrived rules made up to please the public because they're mad at something that happened. You know, which is why you have the one-game playoff now, which is why you have the All-Star Game winner going to the World Series, deciding the home field in the World Series.
Yeah.
Just so stupid. But that's because Bud Selig is a windsock, and he does go by whatever the fans are saying one day to the next. The NFL should be above that. They shouldn't have made that rule like they have it now, but it's over now. You know, it's already in. But I'm with you. I don't care about whether it's a tie or not, but to have that silly rule where you kick a field goal and, oh, wait, the game's not over. We have to give the other team a fair chance now. I don't need that. I'm so over that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think this is cultural, to be honest with you, because everything now has got to be about fairness.
Everybody must have a chance.
That's right. Take it, you know, get off on a little rant here. Take it to the youth sports. We don't keep score. Everybody's a winner, you know. All you have to do is play, and everybody gets a trophy.
Can you imagine a league when we were kids in which they didn't keep score of the games?
Oh, my God. We wouldn't
the
play.
Point of playing the games?
You wouldn't play. You know what you'd do? You and your friends would go to the park and keep score for your own damn selves.
Exactly.
So everything now is just like all the pussy league. And everybody's got to get a chance. We've got to keep it all fair. Oh, wait, they went down the field and kicked the ball and kicked the field goal in overtime. The other guy, but it's just a field goal.
Oh,
you got to give the other guy a chance.
The other guy, yeah.
Yeah, right. So, first of all, here's why the rule is dumb. You give the other team the ball. Odds are very slim they are going to come back to score the touchdown. Have we even seen that yet? Honestly, in my mind, I can't even think of that happening yet, where one team goes down and gets a field goal, and the other team turns around and comes back and gets the touchdown. Because what's going to happen? You get closer, everything's going to tighten up. The other team almost starts playing for the field goal.
Right.
Because it's that overtime mentality, end-of-the-game mentality. So, yeah, it's a stupid rule. Ties are fine. Sudden death overtime was fine. Whatever. And now we, of course, have a tie, and everybody's all up in arms because we had a stupid freaking tie. You know what? It happens. Deal with it. Both of those teams deserve – neither one of those teams deserve to win. That's for damn sure.
It blows my mind that teams could get to 37 points and still not win, but that's how their defense is played. They didn't deserve to win.
Cincinnati played so dumb. Andy Dalton throwing stupid picks. Their field goal kicker's missing kicks. Graham Gano is missing kicks for the for Carolina. Nobody deserved to win that game. Tie, it was perfect.
So what else have we not covered?
We did not talk about the Dallas Cowboys going up to Seattle.
5-1
the
now. I don't want to talk about
five
the Cowboys.
And 5-1, and I'm going to keep beating this drum. One bad half. They have played one really, really bad half of football. They've been pretty clean ever since. And this is like, what the Dallas Cowboys? Neither one of us even had them in the playoffs.
Playoffs?
Yeah. And that division is so ripe for the taking. I mean, yeah, Philadelphia looked decent on Sunday night. They looked decent. They didn't look great. The reason I say they looked decent is because they were playing a shell of a football team.
I was about to say, anyone would have looked decent against that Giants offensive line. That was just pathetic.
Yeah. I do feel bad. I feel bad for Victor Cruz. It's hard to watch. In back of the end zone, just dropping a touchdown because his knee just came off.
Pulled an RG3.
Yeah, no non-contact injury, just going for the ball, and oh, my kneecap popped off. I do feel good that I picked up Odell Beckham Jr. in our fantasy league like 3 days before that. So, sorry, Victor. Hope I didn't put the jinx on you. But, yeah, so Philadelphia, yeah, you never know what you're going to get with them. I actually know exactly what you're going to get. You're going to get what kind of just this crazy, we have no identity, we can't really run the ball anymore, we're pass happy, we're going to destroy the bad teams pretty easily. But we're going to struggle come playoff time. So you know what you're getting with them. Dallas, though, is Dallas finally doing everything that everybody was thinking they should do? They're running the ball.
So, but DeMarco Murray is running the ball, and he typically does not hold up. This has to come to an end eventually, doesn't it? Eventually he has to blow up like Victor Cruz. He has to just disintegrate into thin air. Eventually, Tony Romo has to turn back into Tony Romo and start making stupid throws. Eventually, Jason Garrett has to turn back into Jason Garrett and start coaching dumb. This has to be close to their high point, if not their complete high point. They have to go down from here. I cannot imagine Dallas continuing, because if they keep going up from going to Seattle and winning, if they have more to go from there, then they're going to be 13-3 this year.
Yeah, I mean, they went to That should just about say it, you know. We talk about looking at the schedule. They get to go to Seattle. They get to follow this up with three straight home games.
And this will Giants, be their
Redskins,
oh,
Cardinals.
Boy.
One of those three teams is halfway
decent. Is decent.
I'll let you figure out which one. But here we go again. You get to play the Cardinals. Then you follow that up with Jacksonville, the Giants again. They got the Bears in there. They get the Eagles 2 out of 3 weeks, the Colts and the Redskins. You know what? Maybe not 13-3. I could see 11-5, 12-4 out of that team. They do not have a rough stretch. And we keep expecting that the other thing we talk about, we keep waiting for the clock to strike midnight. They're going to turn back. You know, everything's going to change. What about that the defense? When's that going to? When's the other shoe going to drop with the defense?
That's a very good question. I don't know. Is it? It remains to be seen if it's just Rob Ryan is that bad at his job and that maybe Dallas' defense will be half decent all year just because he's not there to fuck it up, because he hasn't turned the Saints around at all yet.
Right.
You know, they had the bye, of course, this week, and I'm expecting big things from them coming off the bye, but, you know, it may not happen at all. Maybe he really is just that bad. But this being the Cowboys, I'm listening to that upcoming schedule that you told me, and I think I heard Giants, Redskins, and Jaguars in there, like, among their next four games.
Four out of their next five games, that right there. Giants twice, Redskins, Jaguars, Cardinals. Four out of their next five games are against dreadful opponents.
But this is the Cowboys. Would you be surprised if they lost four out of those next five games?
Yeah. I honestly, yes, I'd be surprised if they lost four. Wouldn't be a surprise if they pulled out 2 and 3, though. And in typical Cowboy fashion, I wouldn't be surprised if they beat the Cardinals.
If the Cardinals was the one game that they won, yeah. That's exactly how they operate.
Okay. Yeah. So I think we're in agreement that, yeah, because Dallas tends to have that, you know, stupidest team in football tendency. We have not, I will say, we're pretty late into the season without having dubbed the stupidest team in football.
Well, it's very hard. The Cowboys are not playing Cowboy-like. Detroit got rid of their idiot coach. Tampa Bay got rid of Greg Schiano. You know, it's hard.
Oakland fired their coach and played well.
I was about to say, the other teams that are just terrible, they're just terrible. There's no stupidest team designation among Tampa and Oakland and Jacksonville. They're just bad.
Yeah, stupidest team in football, people, you know, who listen to our show, or if you don't, if you're just listening for the first time, stupidest team in football doesn't necessarily mean you're bad.
No, it just means you have a tendency to do really stupid things.
Yeah, you just, at the worst possible time, brain fart. And you don't do it every week. You do it either in the big moment, the critical time of the game. Yeah, you just pull that. And so I've got a feeling that there are some teams that are going to show these tendencies. Cincinnati, I think, might have some tendencies. Philadelphia, I think, is just going to get coached out of the playoffs this year because it's a mess, even though their record's really good. So we'll see.
The great, vaunted, high and mighty Kirk Cousins, the replacement for RG3, is now 0-7 as a starter. He's throwing terrible, terrible-looking interceptions. I think he's been exposed. He might be the stupidest guy in football. The Redskins might be the dumbest team in football because he just does not look anywhere near like what he looked last year and in the first game that he came in for RG3 this year.
Yeah.
He
played that up so well when RG3 first got hurt. And since then, it hasn't looked too good, has it?
No, it hasn't.
And that was against a pretty scarce Arizona defense. Before the game, I'm listening to the radio, and they're going through the laundry list of guys, which I know you had a problem with all those Arizona injuries before the season started. Oh, that was nothing compared to that list they have now.
Huh.
Of all the guys, that team just doesn't have anybody out there who can play defense, yet they're still winning games. So Bruce Arians must be a genius. Arizona is probably the farthest thing from the stupidest team in football. Because with all that stuff missing, with backup quarterbacks and nobody who can play defense, they're still winning games.
No, we gave credit a couple weeks ago to Todd Bowles, the D coordinator, the former coach at Cal Berkeley. And, they're doing something. If you get the right defensive mind, you can bring in some guys off the street, not, you know, a ton of them, not, you know, 11 new guys on defense or anything, but you can bring in some guys off the street and stick them in the right place and coach them up to be reasonable facsimiles of the guys that you're missing and still produce on the football field. And that's exactly what the Cardinals are doing so far. I don't know if it's going to last all season, but, you know, hats off to them at this point.
Yeah. It won't last all season, and I guarantee you one thing. They won't be picking first next year. They won't have to draft a quarterback next year. Just, you know, all the things that we talk about with these other teams, everybody's got the same problems. Everybody's going to have injuries. Everybody's going to go through a rough patch. But it's, you know, you come out of it better or you come out of it worse. You draft a quarterback and then you torpedo your team for a few years because we've documented pretty well here the last 5 years how many grade A quarterbacks have come out and played well. It's very few. The list is a lot longer on the negative side than it is on the positive.
Yeah, it sure seems like that. Another game I haven't seen the highlights to yet. I'm sure you watched because it was my team against your team. So was that a nice bounce back win for the Bears or was that a bad home loss for the Falcons?
A little of both. Can it be both?
Sure.
Yeah, it can be both. Yeah, because I'll tell you, neither team wanted to play offense in the first half, which is surprising. This game was at 27-13. That game was surprisingly low scoring.
Yeah, we loved the over, and it didn't work.
We did. We did. And Atlanta had, even though Atlanta only got to 13, believe it or not, they actually had a lead in the second half in that game. And then the Bears got some late scores to make it lopsided. But it went exactly the way we thought it would. What didn't happen for either one of us, for what we had talked. Nobody really made the mistakes. There wasn't like the idiotic picks or anything like that, but Atlanta's defense could not match up with those Bear receivers or Matt Forte. And it's got to be frustrating for you as a Bear fan that they have all that offensive talent. And it just seems like they can't always put it together. I don't know how you can go out onto the field with those guys and not have a chance in every game, you know? I mean, you'd think that offense would be unstoppable. We talked about that last week after they lost to Green Bay? Like if they swapped Rodgers and Cutler, and you creamed your shorts when you heard that. So, yeah, I mean, it's really mystifying. And once again, what we talked about the four-headed Atlanta running back situation. And the guy who seems to be kind of getting the short shrift there is Antone Smith.
My guy, Mr. Smith.
And once again, every time he's on the field and touches the ball, he's making huge plays. But there's Mike Smith giving the ball to Steven Jackson, giving the ball to Jacquees Rogers, and nothing's happening. Then they get the ball to Antone Smith, and goes crazy. Antone Smith, if this was the early 90s, he'd be that perfect run and shoot kind of running back, you know?
Yeah, I'm feeling a little.
He'd be like a little Mike Rozier going on there or something, you know? He can do everything. He's perfect in that sort of wide open looking offense within a single back set because he can do a lot. But for whatever reason, they
must
not
see water bug in him.
Yeah, but you know, that sort of run and shoot type running back where you've got a lot of talent at all the outside positions, and you need that running back who can operate in space. You don't need Steven Jackson on the goal line or like third and inches. That's when you need Steven Jackson. You don't need him on first and 10 to fall over for 2 yards.
Well, so, but I understand.
Yeah, the Bears got a nice win.
I understand why they're relying on him, because before they brought him in, they had nothing as far as like a big sledgehammer back when they needed it so desperately down there in Atlanta. So I can see why they fell in love with Steven Jackson when he came in. But, his usefulness should be in smaller doses at this point.
Yeah, because I believe 4th-and-1 probably, just those numbers probably give
that probably
flashbacks to Mike Smith.
Mike Smith's cold sweats.
He wakes up in the middle of the night dreaming about that, all the 4th-and-1 failures they had. I think that was that 27-2 game they had against the Giants where he just decided, you know what, the hell with this. I'm going for every time. They could not get 1 yard so many times in that game. Obviously they've got the big bruising back. But I'll tell you what, 1st-and-10 from your own 20, you don't need 2nd-and-8 from your own 22 every time you touch the ball. And that just seems to be – so they've got a playmaker who they are not utilizing. Hopefully they're going to figure this out as the season goes, because the only way they're going to win – I know you have to outscore the opponent in every game, but the only way they're going to win is to put up huge numbers. 13? If Atlanta puts up 13 a game, they're not winning another game. That defense is so bad.
I need to give props to Matthew Stafford and the Detroit Lions for coming through without Megatron. Now, it helps that Minnesota only scored 3 points. I was just looking at the four-letter network again in the background tonight, and they were having some sort of like Mike and Mike primetime show, and apparently they were taking like a fan poll of the best defenses in the National Football League right now. And to my and I would think everyone else's shock, the number one team by their little poll, the number one best defense in the league right now was the Detroit Lions. And that is a sentence I never thought I would say.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you what. Minnesota moved the ball. And they'd get to the red zone, and Teddy Bridgewater looked like a rookie. That's what happened. I mean, it was a nice win for them. You know, 17-3 doesn't sound particularly exciting. But once again, these were the Schwartz Lions. They lose that game. They find a way. They just losing found them. Didn't matter what, you know. It was like a minefield. Eventually, they were just going to step on that mine, and they were going to lose the game. And it so far, they seem to be passing the tests. It doesn't look pretty, but they're winning games. They're hanging tough in that division. You've got the Lions. I think it's basically coming down to the Lions and the Packers now. They've already got a win against the Packers. So this will be a real fun race going down the stretch. But going down the stretch was where the Lions faltered last year. Because aren't we just waiting for the stupid Lions to come out?
We're keeping our eye on it, but it may not happen.
We're not. I don't think we're expecting it. But it's one of those things where if it happens, everybody kind of goes, well, it's the Lions. Sorry, you know.
Because can you imagine what the Jim Schwartz Lions would have done in two games with a hobbled Calvin Johnson and one game where he's not on the field at all? Who knows what they would have called? They would have had all sorts of bells and whistles to try to compensate, overcompensate for his loss.
For all the quarterback, they can talk about the defense, but are we undervaluing Matthew Stafford right now?
Well, I'm not, because I think he's like I said, one of the best in the league. I don't know if you want to, you know, go with this elite thing and who's elite, who's not elite. I don't rank quarterbacks. I don't know if he's in my top five or not, because I don't know. He's damn good. He's one of the best quarterbacks in football, whatever metric or measurement you want to use, I think. And I think he gets underrated every year myself.
Okay, so that's fair. That's a fair assessment, because you never hear him mentioned in that top tier. But he's always out there throwing for 5,000 yards.
Yeah. Last week we managed to not lose any games in which we agreed on, which was a miracle. And this week we only lost two games that we agreed on. Of course, that Cincinnati tie was one. The other one was San Diego managing to put up 31 points and still not cover because they couldn't stop giving up touchdown passes to Derek Carr.
San Diego's defense was much improved. I think they were just fired up because they fired the coach. Derek Carr looked good. You know, they were moving the ball. I just think San Diego, again, if you're a good team, you get another team who comes in, they're motivated, they punch you in the mouth over and over and over again, but you still kind of find a way to win the game. And I'll tell you what, late in that game, Oakland had absolutely no answer for this Brandon Oliver. He is like Darren Sproles, because he's wearing the same number, but he's like Darren Sproles, but he's running people over. He's little, and he's just running through guys. It's taken four or five guys to tackle him. This guy's not going to have a long NFL career, but he's going to be fun to watch for them, because Ryan Matthews is going to have a hell of a time getting back on the field, because this little guy is doing it.
Well, they want to keep Ryan Matthews off the field always, and this is no different. And the only other thing is I'm going to keep asking this question. Now, do you think the Patriots are back? Because they did it again, and they looked very impressive.
Yeah. They beat Buffalo. They own them, right?
And wait a minute. You can't just claim they're not back.
Buffalo,
and then when they do.
Buffalo actually kind of hung tough in that game for a while. That's another game that got out of hand late. And by the way, since we only have a couple of minutes, it's not enough for tomorrow night. So you can blow the whistle now, but it's not enough. Not enough. Whatever the number is, it's not enough. Is it 14? 15? Because it's not enough.
It might be by game time, but the woeful 1-5 New York Jets are currently only a 10-point underdog at the red-hot 4-2 New England Patriots.
So basically you're telling me the Patriots have to score 11.
You don't think Geno Smith's going to crank it up and turn it on and get it going in this game? It's a division matchup and all of that.
You know what this feels like? This feels like that Eagles-Giants game. I might even say that might be the score. This feels like 27 to zip. This just feels like, this is going to be like a scrimmage for the Patriots tomorrow. And it's not because I think they're back. It's because the Jets are horseshit.
Yeah, they are horseshit. But unfortunately for me, this feels like those traps, one of those division traps. It's a trap. 10 points is still a lot, and I'm going to actually pick the Jets to cover that number. Obviously not to win the game, but that's my crazy.
Wow.
Picks. This is what happens when you're behind in the picks and you have to make up stuff. Join us for our after show. Subscribe in Much Less DTL, the podcast on iTunes. All right, into our VIP after show portion of the program.
Well, and just if I want to turn your stomach a little bit, just so you give you a little update here, the Kansas City Royals are 3 outs away from 3-0 up in the series.
Jesus. Oh. Yeah, I'm kind of resigned to it at this point. When they started off 2-0 in that series on the road playing that crazy ball they're playing, I kind of figured, you know, it's pretty much fait accompli. But the Kansas City Royals in the World Series, I'm still not really understanding it. My brain isn't comprehending the concept.
Yeah. Well, if they win tonight, they still haven't lost a playoff game in 29 years.
That is the most impressive streak in sports, I tell you. Can't touch it.
If I only had money on that.
I wish the Bears hadn't lost that Super Bowl in Miami against Peyton Manning, or else we could say the Bears haven't lost a Super Bowl in 30 years or something like that.
Yeah, they've definitely lost playoff games. So, I don't have a lot of time tonight. What did you have for me tonight? Or for our listeners? It's not for me. It's for our record crowd that we hopefully have carried with us from our last show.
Exactly. They might be driven off by me bitching about fantasy football, and it's not even a pay league. It's our fun league. It's the league that
it's
I'm
our
in.
League. This happened to you in our league?
Yeah.
Okay. Lay it on.
So I am leading my buddy Lebo. Shout out to Lebo, one of my best friends from Chicago Board Options Exchange. I'm leading him by, I'm trailing him in the fourth quarter to go set this up. It's very late in the game. It's that last San Francisco drive after St. Louis ties the game, not ties the game, but got within a touchdown. They got a field goal to get within seven.
Yeah.
The next possession where San Fran is just trying to run the ball and get a first down to try to end the game, they weren't able to do it. We have four players still active in the game. I have two, and Lebo has two. Lebo is leading me by 0.8 of a point. And two players I have still active in the game are defensive players for the Rams. They are Robert Quinn and James Laurinaitis. And Alec Ogletree made the tackle on the running back on the first two runs for the 49ers. And the last run where the running back, Frank Gore, was able to get through the hole and get upfield, the middle linebacker, Laurinaitis, is able to fill that hole and drive him back. And fortunately, only give the Rams a shot to drive and tie the game and send it to overtime, and hopefully get me a really crazy backdoor victory over you. But that point for that tackle puts me ahead of Lebo by 0.2 of a point. And I am reveling. I'm thinking I have come from behind in a crazy manner to get this win, because the two players Lebo has active are the San Francisco kicker, Phil Dawson. But San Francisco just kicked the ball back to St. Louis. Phil Dawson not getting any points unless San Francisco scores again. Oh, no, it gets better. The second player Lebo has active is some random San Francisco 49ers cornerback I've never heard of named Dante Johnson.
Oh, he gets a pick six.
And what does Austin Davis do on this final drive to clinch the victory for you and to clinch the victory for Lebo, as he throws a pick six to this random nickelback named Dante Johnson? That is just a horrible, horrible bad. I think maybe the only way it could have been worse is if that score was the same as it was, where it was me leading Lebo by 0.2 of a point, and someone else got the random pick six, but Phil Dawson comes on to get the extra point, and Lebo winds up beating me by less than a point.
No, I think what would have been worse is if you would have been winning by 10.
Oh.
Because pick six in our league is huge. Because you get the pick, you get the return yardage, you get the touchdown. That probably would have been the worst. You know, you don't want to be up by the exact number of points that you would lost on that play. Oh, I've had it. So I lost a game by 0.2 points because I'd be 5-1 right now in our league, except for a few weeks back. Jeremy Maclin tackled a guy on a pick, and that's where I lost it. Because you get the defensive stat. So, yeah, you always find a way, especially in our league where we play with individual defensive players. I can't play it the other way. I can't play with defensive teams. I just can't do it. I know that's the most popular way. Almost everything is set up that way, but I don't know. We've been doing IDP forever.
Yeah.
And it seems like, you know, you're paying attention to both sides of the ball more.
Right, exactly.
You know, and we play with a lot of defensive players. I think we field 7 defensive players. So, you know, you can win games because your defense has a great week. It's like it should be.
We field 8 defensive players.
Yeah.
We have 3 DBs, 3 linebackers, and 2
D
linemen.
You are correct. So, yeah, the D line is very random. I also need to point out that your number one draft pick, Gerard Mayo, is out for the year. What are you going to do now without your number one pick?
I don't know. You know what? He's worth the number one pick because he won me the first game of the season. So he's already earned his status.
Yeah, you know, a lot of guys in fantasy teams don't get you a win all by themselves. And he pretty much did.
That's exactly right.
He led
right.
your team in points in that first game. Yeah, no, I'm really feeling lucky because my number one pick, Eddie Lacy, has done crap other than one game. But my second round pick was DeMarco Murray.
Oh, jeez.
So on that side, I feel pretty good. And I managed to somehow, even though I was in third place, hop on the waiver wire and claim this Brandon Oliver this last week. He had a huge week. I watched the end of that San Diego-Oakland game. And, they just kept running the exact same play with him right up the gut over and over and over. And Oakland had nothing. Absolutely nothing. So, I know we want to talk, you know, San Diego looked so good in some of those wins, but when you can look bad and still win, usually you end up having a pretty good season.
Yeah, and they weren't going to go 15-1 or, you know, 14-2, so they're going to have hiccups along the way. We just have to keep a close eye on them and see what those hiccups are going to be because they look so awesome up until this point.
Well, it'll be interesting because with the Chargers having such a good record and being in the same division with Denver, you know, the Chargers are going to kind of play that foil role to the Broncos like the Chiefs tried to last year. But
yeah.
The difference seems to be that the Chargers actually play the Broncos tough.
And the Chiefs had their chances to play them tough last year late in the season because weren't the Chiefs undefeated when they finally got around to playing Denver?
Yeah, it was pretty ridiculous. They were both like, their records were insane.
Yeah.
When they both played and they got completely housed.
Yeah.
Let me just take a look here because that's interesting if we get deep into the season before they start playing each other. Because they haven't played each other yet.
San Diego and Denver.
Oh, here we go. Yeah, San Diego, Denver actually play on next Thursday night.
Oh, baby. That's
San Diego at Denver a week from Thursday. And then they play each other again week 15. So towards the end of, middle end of the season, they play each other again. So two critical games there because those are both one-loss teams right now in that division.
Yeah, those are going to be some good ones right there.
Yeah, but San Diego played them really tough last year, won one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then did they play in the championship game? Am I remembering that correctly?
Well, New England and
no, that's right.
So went to Denver for the title game.
Was it San Diego
right.
the week before?
Okay,
yeah. So it was the divisional round. I know you love that term. It was the divisional round the week before. That was not a blowout either.
It's the conference semifinals.
Right.
It
is official. It's 3-0 Kansas City now.
Wow. I have no words for that.
So, yeah, interesting. You know, it's been a fun show because we've done a little looking ahead. We're starting to get to that time of the year where you can start kind of getting a gauge of teams and starting looking down the road
a little bit more. But this year more than the others, to me, it's just as wide open and wild as I can remember. Because Dallas at 5-1, you would think is, you know, Dallas and San Diego are the two top teams, but I can't bend my mind around that. I don't trust either one of those two to be at the top of their respective conferences by the time the playoffs begin. So,
sure.
You know, how can I believe in that? You know, Philadelphia is at 5-1. I don't trust them. You know, the top teams to me this year are not trustworthy. So I'm kind of not believing what I'm seeing with a lot of these teams. But I guess that's what makes it fun.
Well, I'll give you two reasons why you have to trust Philadelphia and Dallas. The Giants and the Redskins.
Yeah.
There's your reasons. Do you trust either one of those teams to give those teams a run for this? So it's going to either be the Eagles or the Cowboys, right? Don't you kind of figure?
To win the NFC East, yes. But
yes.
They're at the top of the conference at this point. They have better records than Green Bay and Seattle. Do you think Philly and Dallas will have better records than Green Bay and Seattle at the end of the year?
You know what? It's possible that one of them does, just from the standpoint that Green Bay is playing tougher opponents.
Yeah.
The bottom half of that division that Green Bay is in right now, which would be the Bears and the Vikings, it's a lot more competitive than the Giants and the Redskins right now.
Well, the Bears can be very competitive on their best days, but I don't think Green Bay sees them as much of a threat. I think Green Bay knows exactly how to beat the Bears. And, of course, the Vikings are crap. I still think Green Bay is going to wind up like 12-4 or something. I think they're going to march through that division. Detroit is going to be the toughest challenge by far, but I think they know how to handle the Bears, unfortunately.
Well, it's funny because we were talking about this Lions team being rated the number one defense so far. So I'm like, hey, you know, let me take a look at this. They've given up 82 points in 6 games.
That's not bad.
That's like two halves. That's like two bad halves for Tampa Bay.
They're not using the Tampa 2 in Detroit, I don't believe.
No. That's not the Tampa 2 anymore. That's now the Tampa number 2.
That's the brown fever, but in a whole different. That's the Ebola fever.
Oh wait, too soon. Because you know, terrible towels carry Ebola. Did you see that?
I did. The Jaguars mascot, bad mascot. Very funny, but bad mascot.
Do you think that that was the Cleveland PA announcer, the guy playing the music? You know.
Which one? Because there's the White Sox music guy.
Was it the White Sox guy?
Yes, when Chuck Finley came to pitch against
Chuck
the White
Finley.
Sox.
You think that guy got fired and now he's the Jaguars mascot?
Chuck Finley was famously married to Tawny Kitaen, the Whitesnake music group video vixen girl, who turned on Chuck Finley in a drunken rage and tried to like stab his eye out with her high heel shoe or something like that. Not very long after that incident, like maybe a week or two weeks after, Chuck Finley comes to pitch for, I think he was still with the Angels, against the White Sox.
Angels. I thought it was the Indians for some reason.
He might have been
Angels.
With the Indians by that point. And the White Sox PA guy, as Finley is on the mound warming up during his 8 pitches before he starts to the bottom of the first inning, decides to play a little White Snake over the PA system.
Well, and wow, here we go. If anybody
got fired,
if anybody under about 30 is listening to our show,
what's White Snake?
Who's Tawny Kitaen? Yeah. Who's Chuck Finley? No clue. We just lost half our audience, probably.
Google, kids. It's called Google.
Yeah,
look it up.
It's called Wikipedia. It's called Google. Tawny Kitaen. I believe that's Kitaen. So look
it
up.
That's right.
Thank you.
Also known as the Chicken Bachelor Party, the wife of Tom Hanks in the great movie Bachelor Party, which you've also never heard of if you're under 30, but I love that
no,
movie.
No, because there's
I
probably,
will.
If you're also under 30, you think that Tom Hanks only makes good movies.
Tom Hanks was in a raunchy comedy? Really?
Tom Hanks was on TV dressed like a woman?
That's Bosom Buddies. Again, Google,
right.
Folks. Look it
Google
up.
Google it. Google it, yeah. Tom Hanks is Tom Hanks probably wants the first 10 years of his movie career scrubbed by IMDb.
probably not.
That's
actually,
the other
ton of money off of that.
Oh, he's probably getting residuals for Joe versus the Volcano.
Jeez.
Or Dragnet, you know.
Yeah.
Or was it Turner and Hooch?
Oh, with a slobbering dog. Yes, indeed.
Thank you. See, yeah. It wasn't always Philadelphia and Saving
no.
Private Ryan.
Nope.
For Mr. Hanks.
No, it wasn't. There's a lot of garbage that came before the movie with the volleyball.
That was Castaway.
Okay. See, yeah, it's.
It was Philadelphia and Forrest Gump that really kind of like jumped him out of the gate. Yeah. Before that, there wasn't a whole lot. It was some nice movies, but it was like big. It was like little fun movies. You were like, this guy's got no chops. And then all of a sudden he's doing. And then all of a sudden everything became meaty. And every year he was like Oscar bait. You know,
right.
He went from making just junk movies that nobody even gives a shit about anymore to like some of the most revered movies ever.
It's the plan that Matthew McConaughey is on now. Just 10 years of schlock, and eventually you get the meaty
okay.
roles, and you build your resume up.
I guess. Yeah, I guess so. And although, yeah, because he kind of plays the same guy in every movie, but
yeah.
That's okay.
So does Tom Hanks.
Tom Cruise has made a whole career of playing the same guy in every movie.
Yes.
Seriously, watch a Tom Cruise movie where he's somebody different.
No, he's pretty much always the little smirking, arrogant, 5'2" prick. Yeah.
Yeah. If there's one movie that he actually was in where he seemed like he played somebody different, I highly suggest this movie if you haven't seen it. It's Tropic Thunder.
Yeah.
If you've seen that one, it's probably one of my favorite Tom Cruise roles.
I haven't seen it, but I'm a fan of the Dan Le Batard podcast, and one of his entry, one of his bumpers to get back into the show was just playing that rant of him on the phone about, listen here, fuckface, I'm going to rip your fucking head off. This is a
fuckstick.
Pan-American play here.
I know they probably have it bleeped out, but I think they actually calls him fuckstick.
Oh, okay.
It's even better. Yeah, I highly recommend. That's one that you and the wife could rent. Highly inappropriate movie. Very funny. That's where Robert Downey Jr. plays a black guy.
Yes, that's the what do you mean, you people? What do you mean, you people?
That's
right. I know all the lines. I just haven't seen the movie.
See the movie.
Sums up all of my movie watching experience. Yeah. I know all the famous lines. I just haven't watched most of the movies.
Very, very fun movie. Do not have, don't have, it's not deep or anything like that. It's just a fun little comedy. You'll like it. I recommend it for you and the wife.
Is that the Roger Ebert official review, It's Not Deep?
It wouldn't be his review today.
No, it'd be kind of hard for him to make some reviews today.
It'd be kind of just gurgle, gurgle, gasp or something like that.
All right, I'm going to let you get out of here and tend to your wife.
Thank you. Yeah, no, actually, it's not the wife I'm tending to. I'm on baby duty because the wife is asleep.
Gotcha.
So she checked out here about 20 minutes ago. I've been listening. Been listening for the cries coming from upstairs, but I'm pretty sure they'll be coming soon. So yeah, I get to be up all night with my 7.5-week-old son. So that's my fun tonight.
But I hope you don't have anything planned Saturday night, because I got something planned again for this Friday night. So we'd have to do the pig show Saturday again.
Yeah, Saturday should work. I think Saturday's good. We don't have we were hoping to have plans to go out with friends or do something, but we have no babysitters on Saturday. So I'll be right here doing the show with you Saturday night, no problem.
All right, unless something changes, because we have plans
well,
change all the time.
Then we're doing it Sunday at 7 a.m.
All right, you heard him. Tentatively scheduled for Saturday night at 9 p.m. Central Time, 10 p.m. Eastern, is In Much Less Detail, the podcast picking the rest of NFL week number 7. Enjoy your Thursday night game, which hopefully will not be another Tom Brady blowout for my purposes anyway.
And I will say right now, if we have half the number of listeners that we had in that last show, I'm going to shit my pants.
You heard him, folks. He's going to shit his pants
live on radio.
Live on air, yeah. He's Jay, I'm Dre. This is In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Thank you for listening, and we will see you Saturday night.